Here we are on the Row Network podcast, episode 18. Really excited to have Jawad Ashraf on from Virtua, CEO of Virtua. How are you doing today, Jawad?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. We are really excited to discuss Virtua and everything you guys got going on. But before we get into that, I'd love to start with your background. I was doing some research and I've seen you've spent quite a bit of time in software development. Where did you kind of grow up? What was your education like, and how did you get into programming and software development?
You know, the funny thing is I loved computers from when I was little. And when they first brought out the first black and white computer, 16K black and white, the ZX Spectrum in the UK, I used to get like Sinclair Monthly magazine and type in the code so I could play things like, you know, Asteroids. You'd actually write the code, and then you'd end up playing the game. So I went from the 16K black and white ZX81 to the 48K Spectrum, 48K and color, amazing. Then from there, I went to the VIC-20, the Commodore 64, the Atari ST, the Commodore Amiga, then eventually to a PC. So as soon as I got my hands on a computer, I was playing around with it and coding. I loved it. From day one, I thought, holy crap, this is amazing.
Wow. So you started like as a kid, just wanting to game on computers and having to like build asteroids to then play it, which is wild. That's amazing. Honestly, and we just had this talk right before we fired it up. That's kind of how I plan to introduce my child to kind of tech and getting into it. I really would love for him to take on that task. So that's why I asked that question is how,
and then,
how
you got and then, let me quickly grab some.
Yeah.
This is actually one of the first ever personal computers, right?
The
ZX Spectrum, 48K. Whoa. This must be about 40 years old, but this is the computer. This is the computer I learned to program on.
Oh wow! And you still hold it?
Yeah, you plugged it into the back of the TV, and the rubber—it was like sponge. The keypad, but this is it. So I keep
That's
it as a memory.
Wild. That is a great piece of history to keep around. That's awesome that you still hold that to this day and can show it off throughout all your history. So growing up in tech, and I see you've had a long history of jobs in tech, like that just kind of engulfed you and you led down the path of development. What were kind of some of the jobs that kind of led you towards blockchain? Like how did you find blockchain?
Well, the thing is, you know, I only worked full time for about 1.5 years after I graduated. So I was always, always interested because like imagine from every single computer to the next, I saw the shift of computing power, functionality, games change. And I was playing games right from the beginning. In fact, Gary Bracey was my co-founder in Virtua. He was running one of the largest video game companies in the world. And I used to buy games that he made back in my sixth grade. So that's actually one of the reasons I hunted down Gary to try to get him to co-found the company with me. Because he's a gaming OG. So, but like over the years, basically, so I did a computer science degree. Then after that, I went into my first full-time job that did for 1.5 years. Then after that, I started doing freelance stuff. I started working kidnap and ransom and anti-terrorism software, you know, bomb blast simulations of stuff like that. Worked with the Ministry of Defense with the guys who built the space shuttle sort of thing. Then after that, I started building technology which would look for a missing gap in the market, so and try to build on top of that. So, for example, when I worked in anti-terrorism, so that was me freelance. Basically, they used to insure a whole load of stuff in the city, multiple towers, and only insure it up to a certain amount. And so then I managed to work with the Ministry of Defense and create a virtual van around all the buildings and do a bomb blast and actually see how much damage it would do, which is only 10%. So they were able to insure 10 times more. And so when they deregulated power in Europe, I created an options trading system that would allow people to buy and trade electricity contracts across all of Europe. And then after that, I moved into mobile gaming. And there was a company I was involved in over here called The Entertainer, which was almost like a royalty application. And we ended up doing an exit for about 125 million on that. I was one of the key people there. And after that, I set up a VR company because I was really interested in where everything was going. So back in 2017, I set up a VR company just to play with the market and understand what people were doing in VR because no one was giving you any data. And at a mobile gaming company, simultaneously, that 24 million downloads of the games. And then at the end of that, I thought, okay, well, here's blockchain, here's VR, and here's metaverse. And that's actually then I started hunting down the team to create Virtua. And then it was born. And back in 2019, we launched a metaverse in VR on blockchain with NFTs, and no one knew what we were doing. So then we thought, ah, okay, let's try to water down our model and wait for it to come. And sort of that's how we sort of started the progression of Virtua. NFT assets will be metaverse compatible, then eventually metaverse. Then you got to the point where you realized there wasn't a blockchain that was fit for purpose for brands. And that's where we've really gone now with Vayner, which is like a proper mass market solution. Because the fundamental thing we believe, and I believe, is every single tech cycle that I've seen, no one cares about the tech. They care about the utility. Like if you use your iPhone, every single thing on that phone is different, but it feels the same, right? But that's what blockchain should be. It should be enabling the future instead of being about the tech. And
Absolutely.
that's sort of like where we are with Vayner. We want it to be the world's biggest blockchain that nobody knows about. That's sort of what we want.
It makes complete sense. Like when I'm using my iPhone, I don't know how any of it works. I don't know how my phone restarts or how it connects to the internet or what the
Who
back
cares?
rails are of that. Yeah, I just want it to work, you know? And when I'm gaming, likewise, I don't want to know, you know, what chain I'm on or what's happening really. I want to have fun. That's all I want to do, you know. And you
You know,
guys are definitely bringing a lot of that.
you use AWS, you use Azure, you use Google Cloud. It's all running your infrastructure. Blockchain is infrastructure, right? But do you care? You care about the apps that are on it. And that's really where we think things need to go. And spending so many years working with brands, we just dealt with brand after brand after brand who were confused, didn't know what was going on. The tech, they didn't understand. All they were hearing was cryptocurrency tokens. They have all sorts of green agendas. They have blockchain issues. And there's just no simplicity. And the right fit is what wins, not the best tech.
That it 100% makes a lot of sense. Before we really dive into it, I've got one last question about your upcoming, and it kind of pertains to us, like as startup founders ourselves. And I saw, like, during your time at The Entertainer, you had also kind of co-founded Virtua. You know, what's it like to have a full-time job kind of at The Entertainer and working on Virtua at the same time as a startup? Like, how did you manage your time doing that?
It's tiring, but you know, this is the thing. You know, I've been building businesses since I was young, and what you realize, if I'm sure you know this, right? That at the end of the day, when you're running your own business, there is no such thing as a weekend off. And what and so, you know, you were balancing your time, and also the founder of The Entertainer, Donna, who's awesome, right? She was like, Jawad, you can manage both. You know, at the end of the day, just do what you need to do. And the funny thing is, she was the only private shareholder who then invested into Virtual. So when we did the exit, she literally took the deck, looked at the deck, and went, "Okay, I'm going to give you like $1 million. How much do you want to give me?" And she just didn't care. You know, I said, "Why?" She goes, "Look, you helped me make my company succeed. So whatever you're doing, I believe it's going to work." And you know, for her, my gosh. Her ROI is insane, but she deserves it 100 times over.
100%. Yeah, so great support from those around you and like the businesses you worked for before. That's
Absolutely.
awesome to hear. That's really cool. So what then, like, what made you take the leap? Like, what in your life said, all right, it's time to go full time Virtua, you know?
Thing is, it was every business I did and every exit I've had has always been full time. So imagine the only full-time job was back when I was 23, 22. Entertainer was like a blip in between where it was very interesting because it was like a massive pivot to the technology company. But I was only in there with a mindset that I would only be in there to do this and get out because the full-time job wasn't for me. It never
Yeah.
was.
I love that. So you were in and out, you know, getting stuff created and doing your thing. And then for those listening, can you explain, you know, in kind of the elevator pitch what Virtua is?
Well, there's two aspects to it. Virtua itself, gaming metaverse. So the whole idea is to be a central hub for all games, because a lot of games are actually web two and they're not very social, but they have massive user bases. And so what you're now doing is providing a metaverse space, which has got gamification, socialization, games, voice over IP, video streaming, the lot, which is an extension to a standard Web2 game. So if you look at like an average mobile game that's doing well, there's 60 million users who aren't talking to each other. So we're providing the ability for those games to plug into the virtual network. Then every gamer ends up having a metaverse space, and they can earn cool stuff by going back and playing the game. So now you're creating a rewards loop because most of these mobile games, over 1 billion users of these, they basically are engaged with a game, but they can't actually do anything more to monetize that user other than make them watch ads. And there's so much competition. So now by doing this, we're gently bringing in a massive audience into our ecosystem. So, one of our first big gaming partnerships got over 500 million users, and their first big game is going to be launched in a month's time, integrated into Virtua. But the key thing then is that Virtua is a company that uses the Vaynar blockchain. And everything we're doing now is focused on that building block ecosystem, because right now everything in crypto is all over the place. If you've got a new blockchain, it's like just build these dApps, suggest what you want, we'll give you a grant, and then they're all fragmented, And people end up having a dApp which is only flavor of the month, and then it dies. So what we're trying to do here is, okay, here's Virtua. Here are the components from Virtua that brands can then use the blockchain for and create their own experience under Vaynar. Here is the other vertical, and that might, for example, you get an avatar creator as a standalone company. You can have another company which is doing like fractionalization of digital assets. But all of the and like we got loads of announcements we're going to make, but you can have a massive gaming platform coming on board as well. Now all these things now start complementing each other, all using the same blockchain. And so what we're doing now is saying Virtua is now a Vaynar brand, and look at all of these cool things which makes Virtua bigger. Because a gaming metaverse is a piece of the puzzle, but then where are digital avatars? Where are gaming networks? Where are the big AAA games? All of these things should play together. So an avatar, for example, that should be able to just work in Virtua, then work in any of the games connected to in Virtua, then go to an FPS which is running on our blockchain, and the same avatars using the FPS, or put it behind the driver, put it behind in a racing game and let the avatar drive it. And all of those are underpinned by a blockchain. And you can't do all of this on your own. If we've seen all these super ambitious projects that have said they're going to do this and this and this. And you know what? A lot of our team are from gaming backgrounds. It costs millions of dollars to build like a good AAA game. So you've got to empower and enable multiple people in your ecosystem to now build great products, but give them the network effect of plugging their businesses into yours. Because right now, whenever you've got any new technology, you need multiple companies initially to level it up, because there just aren't enough users. And right now, everything's super fragmented. So we're trying to create an elegant framework. Even with Vaynar, we're literally listing 50 dApps that are required for the ecosystem. And if you're a developer, come in and make those dApps. And here's a business relationship. Here's the partnership. Here's the plan. Here's your incubator. And then I'm going to take a dApp to the next level, because you'll become a Lego component of a wider ecosystem. So rather than, here's a grant, what do you think is a good idea? No, we want to have a structured approach in the way that that's done, because once you've got all those building blocks in place, you now have something which is far greater than the sum of its parts. So that's the meandering
I love
summary.
that actually. It kind of breaks down well, and I kind of feel like I need to take a step back and ask. So it sounds like the foundation of all of this is becoming Vayner, the blockchain, almost as like the parent company.
Yep.
So what's like kind of the elevator pitch for Vayner as a block? It's a gaming blockchain and infrastructure, or how do you
Yeah.
view that?
So look, basically, this was birthed from the fact that imagine we've spoken to so many brands. We work with legendary Paramount. We've been talking to Disney. We've talked to all the major music studios over the years, and you came back to the same thing. Like the first thing was, okay, what's the cost, right? Because we've got variable costs in L2s and L1s. And effectively, then it was the next question, which is the interesting question, was how many people are developing for this blockchain? If you're a brand or a business, you really need to look at how much of a development pool you have. And that was a big, big, big thing. And if you look at it, look at how many people are in your blockchain. You've got Polkadot, Cardano, et cetera. You're talking about thousands of developers, not hundreds of thousands. The ones that have the most are EVM chains. You know, they have the most because it's all solidity. So what is the development platform? And then if it was a case of any of the L1s that were non-EVM, it was like, we can't even take the risk of doing that because we can't get the developers. And the next thing was speed. You know, what's the latency? And then the next one was green. And you know what? Green, even though it becomes like a cyclical lip service thing, it's actually going to become more and more important over time as governments start enforcing it. Even in China, you've got these things called the N+1 plans every 5 years with a 30-year green government-enforced level of regulation. And it's coming in every country. Every country is going to have to do that. And no blockchain is green out the gate. They'll tell you they'll plant a tree or two, right? And but apart from that, it's that was it. So we were, okay, so let's look at the landscape. If you're an L1, if you're not EVM compatible, let's forget that. Okay, if you're an L2, you're rolling up to an Ethereum, which fundamentally, if in the last bull cycle was $70 a transaction with this percentage of population, if 10% come in, even with sharding, you're going to have a high fee and everything's going to roll up to a high fee. So let's forget that. So what we did was then just take Ethereum, forked it. And then the other thing that we did was we locked the gas to 1/20th of a cent, no matter what. There's no gas wars. It will never go above that. Because when you want to have adoption of a product, you need to not focus on making money off that infrastructure piece. It should be everything running on top of the infrastructure. And often you've got chains that are trying to make money on the transaction fees. They're really, it's not important. You know, give your validators rewards, but that's, apart from that, you shouldn't bother. So it was locked price. And then the next thing, and EVM compatible, then the next thing was it's green. And by green, I mean, we're partnered with Google, right? So I sat down with Google, we worked through all the stuff we're trying to do. And Google have got commitment to be 100% renewable energy by, I think, 2030. That's a plan. And so they've already got a whole load of data centers that are 100% renewable energy with some very, very powerful green monitoring tools. So you know exactly how much carbon every single server uses. So we agreed with them to run with those renewable data centers. And of course you can have like Tom in a shed, that's not going to go away, but we'll be able to direct our traffic. So let's say a brand wants to do something, they can create an L2 token, and that L2 token will only be processed by those Google data centers. And the other thing is Google have an underwater network, which is what they used to use internally, which is a subsea network, which is super fast. And so our blockchain is now using that super fast, low latency underwater network. We're using the renewable data centers with carbon measurement, EVM compatible, and fixed price. So none of the stuff we're talking about is rocket science, but it just works. And another thing that we have, which is a bit different, and this really comes down to working with the brands, is that, you know, when you have most blockchains, they're pure proof of stake, okay? And when they're pure proof of stake, what ends up happening is you have a lot of bad actors operating your chain. You know, there's a lot of people who are running nodes and, you know, they've got no background to speak of, or they're running Ponzi schemes with their community. And they're basically just gathering everyone's tokens, trying to get them to be voted in as a stake, as a validator. Then they take 80% and give back 20%. So what we have is that we have got a slightly different consensus mechanism. So the whole thing operates like proof of stake. But there is the ability for any bad actors to be voted out before they go to the vote, right? So what that means is that if you are a global brand, just like if Kanye says some crazy stuff, they'll drop him in an instant. Their brand reputation is worth more than money. And when any brand uses any blockchain with proof of stake, they're exposed, full stop. Because the second you've got a bad actor and that starts surfacing, which it will, right? Sooner or later, it's very early, but it will, they will drop that technology like a hot potato. So we're saying, look, there's a level of protection in what we're doing. Yes, the community votes them in, they do everything else, and you brands can run validator nodes, but any bad actors can be voted out even before the voting process, which is what they want to hear, and it's actually correct. This has come from dealing with them. So now then you've got five things here that are all USPs. You put those together, we got something that nobody else has got. And that's why when a brand comes now, they can say, okay, I want a metaverse and I want to have a marketplace and I want to have a metaverse space and I want to have a KYC and I want to have a wallet. We can say, okay, There's a vein in our wallet. Here's a marketplace. Here's metaverse spaces courtesy of Virtua. Here's an avatar space courtesy of Avatar Company A. And this is your monthly subscription. They pay, and then we automate the staking, all of the things that you normally do. But they just see a fee, and they have a one-stop shop. So that's really the direction of what we're doing. And this is why, honestly, what we're doing isn't super smart, and it's not super, super, super brand new technology. Because 90% of the stuff everyone wants, they don't care about. The same version of Word you had in 20 years ago fundamentally does what Word does now. All the bells and whistles don't mean a damn thing. They just want it to do their job. It's a blockchain, great. It's green, it's great. It's fast, wonderful. It's EVM, oh great, we got the developers. Oh, and we can keep bad actors off. We tick every box.
That 100%, Juana, I love what you're saying there. So it kind of sounds like to me, almost like you've taken all of these concepts, looking at a gaming chain, everything you would want for Virtua, what makes this thing work as you're building it out. And now you have the ability to white label it almost for other brands that are coming in. You've worked very long. Like, we've been very jealous at Rare Bloom of having you guys at the event and all the stuff you guys do for booths and things like that. And you guys have made some amazing partnerships over the years. So it sounds like all of this that you've built out, you're now able to bring to these big brands and say, hey, you want to build a game on blockchain? We have a safe, green, fast, you know, we're on EVM with the developers here that you can use. And we've built out things like wallets and marketplaces and all that you already need. And you can look at Virtua as a use case for that. Is that kind of where this is going?
Yeah, exactly. And also, it doesn't mean that, because we want a DApps ecosystem, it doesn't exclude other blockchains. Because look, fundamentally, when you've got major apps, they use different stacks at the back end. You use the blockchain that fits that use case. So if you want Web3 technology to work, like you do, like I was at a government think tank thing 2 days ago, and it's like there should not be one government blockchain. It should be multiple government blockchains that are actually going ahead and getting these things run. And then also, it's also so important to drive education, right? Because ultimately what happens is that you want to level up an entire market in learning more to engage with the technology. So we're going gangbusters, like a bit like Sandeep did in India, we're doing in Pakistan, multiple countries in Africa at the moment. People need to be leveled up. We're going big into education. We're linking with like hundreds of universities. We're providing training courses in Solidity and Web3. We're providing training camps. We're providing them access to the sort of thought leaders they never get. In a lot of these countries, these guys have got to do stuff via FAQs and wikis and YouTubes, and you've got some incredible talent. So we really want to push this into developing nations where all the opportunities are as well. And we're in Dubai, and Dubai is like the heartbeat of crypto at the moment.
Yes, we've been to Dubai twice in the past year for the Cardano and you made Summit it home. Blockchain Live. We made it. Oh, it's beautiful there. I tell everybody, like, go vacation to Dubai. It's absolutely amazing. It's a wonderful city, great food, great people. I mean, the blockchain industry there, like you said, is flourishing. Mm-hmm. We've talked to some folks and they're like, you could go to a blockchain event every single day if you had the time in Dubai. Yes. And how has that been for you? And like, I see your past is, from the UK and Dubai, you've been back and forth. So you've got to see all of that grow in Dubai. Like, what's that like? What's like the crypto scene in your mind? Like, how did it grow out there and how do you see it?
Basically, there used to be a time in the first round of crypto, the first cycle, you were going to America, you were going to Korea, generally flitting between the two countries. A lot was happening in those countries. And now everyone's here. Everyone's here. If anyone's in crypto, you're going to be in Dubai sooner or later. Now you're seeing Dubai and Singapore surfacing more. But like, basically, this is a place where they're trying to get things regulated. They've got three different major government bodies trying to get regulation for crypto. They're allowing you to set up crypto companies. Some of the banking stuff is coming along, right? So essentially what you're seeing is government support, government encouragement. They're creating Web3, Web incubation centers and the DIFC. And, you're seeing the government announce blockchain initiatives, so right now, while everyone in the West is just trying to figure out how can I protect my little establishment and keep it tied up and hold on to what I have and forget new technology because that doesn't further my self-interest. These places are seeing it as an opportunity for growth. And actually everything I'm seeing it from both sides. You know, I'm looking at the West and looking in the Middle East and looking in Asia. And Asia and the Middle East is like, how can we make this an opportunity? How can we change things and enable them? And in the West, it's like, I must hold on to this and I will do everything to regulate it out of existence, but you never can. Blockchain, cryptos, 24/7, it's never gonna stop. And if you're not in it now, you're gonna lose it. It'll move.
It sounds like, it feels like, honestly, America is like an elderly country and the old guard, they don't want to learn and like move forward. And the kids are like, we're moving forward with technology here. You can't stop it. And with that, like, what has been your interaction with Vayner and Virtua with regulators and governments? I'm sure it's been very positive over there in Dubai. And who else have you guys interacted with and what's that been like?
Well, basically, the whole point is, like, for example, with Vayner, I mean, there was a new structure that being introduced in the Caymans, which are the first, like, regulated foundations, token-regulated foundations. So we were talking to the government. It's a brand-new type of structure that came out last year that works really well for blockchains. And, you know, you understand over the years how you need to set up company structures. So Vayner is there. Vayner is a foundation. Virtua is a company. It's based in the UK. It's a limited company, but it doesn't own the blockchain. So it really needs to be clear separation between businesses that are building dApps on a foundational blockchain and an ecosystem. And what we're doing, we're growing that ecosystem on a fantastic blockchain. But in terms of regulators, you're not issuing your token out of these countries because these countries aren't mature yet. I wouldn't say there's one mainstream super, you know, like city, like nation, which is utterly blockchain regulated. Not yet. This is one of the closest places. Singapore is one of the closest places, but no one is mature yet. There's no one that you literally, there's no place I would want to set up a crypto blockchain in and not guarantee my ass is not going to end up in jail at some point.
We have at Rare Network, we want to tokenize. It's on the roadmap, but we're afraid. We don't know in America, like, you know, how do we drop this token? How do we set it up? Do we need to go to Dubai and set up a company over there? So that's one of our fears. And to hear that from you, it sounds like we're on the right path.
You're on the right path. In the very fact that you guys are based in America and you're associated with that company, it's just too much risk. You would need to have a completely separate entity in another country. Because you know what? I know multiple companies in America that have had court cases leveled against them around just mentioning or using a token with no substance whatsoever. And they've had to do massive multi-million dollar court settlements just because their entire business was choked for 2 years. They couldn't move forwards. Really promising crypto projects were murdered in the crib, you know? So
that's been our fear.
Yeah, emigrate.
I've been to Dubai twice. It sounds beautiful over there. If I could convince the wife, we'd come. I really want her to come for vacation.
Oh, this you get to come for vacation. I came for a week and I've been here for 19 years.
Came for a week and basically never left. That's awesome. And like with that, I guess, like, what would you, so do you suggest, I guess, a lot of folks then, you know, get outside of the US and like check out blockchain in other countries? Like, it feels like there's a lot more happening outside of the US, even in the UK. There's a lot happening.
Everything's moving faster elsewhere. You know, the thing is that if you stifle a community, you're not going to see that innovation. Entrepreneurs are going to be frightened. And like, if the media vilifies just a technology, you know, one aspect of a technology, then other places move faster. If you're interested in blockchain, look around, you know, come to Dubai, you know, go to other countries. There's so much going on. And you know what? You don't even need to move. You just need to be aware of what's going on and plug into those communities. Everything's virtual now. You know, we know this. That's what it is. And these countries, what you get, though, is a breath of fresh air. People are encouraging it. People want you to get involved in it. People are innovating. People are collaborating. You know, the blockchain is a very collaborative industry. You're always working with people. We're announcing partnerships daily. You know, people that we want to work with. And essentially, that's the beauty of this space. You know, it's watching companies move over the years. This is the first time You've got multiple companies that are mutually cooperating in terms of a common interest. I've never seen this in any single tech cycle. Everyone's been a competitor. But this time around in crypto, it's very different and it's refreshing. And if you're in an ecosystem where that's all happening, it's wonderful. It's really nice to be not stifled. And every time here looks at America, what's going on in the States, you think, oh gosh.
Yeah, I think the viewers are going to love to hear that like refreshing take on, outside of the US that it's looking up and there's things to do. And I'd love to get your take. I know it's a little off topic, but like your thoughts on US regulation and the ETFs getting approved. Do you think that's more of like a signal thing of, hey, we're headed in the right direction? Do you think it's good for finance? What are your thoughts on that?
I just think all the competitive incumbents have been knocked out of the way. Then all of a sudden, you have the largest hedge funds in America going into ETFs. I don't know. You can make your own conclusions by that. It just looks like more consolidation of power to me.
Very good point. Yeah, and yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. It's like, is it the best vehicle to actually invest in? I don't know. It just looks like consolidation of power, but maybe
It
you
is,
get
but
good
you know.
regulation.
Yeah, I mean, look, Bitcoin ETFs are still going to make more money than putting into savings bond. But ultimately, it's a shame that the free market isn't truly a free market anymore.
Makes
It's just
complete sense.
large monopolies controlling everything with lots of influence.
100%, I agree 100%. And so you mentioned a little earlier maybe a game dropping soon on Virtua or Vayner. What's upcoming here? What do we got on coming down the pipeline?
Okay, so I won't give details, but essentially, staking is really boring, okay? And what we're trying to do is innovate. And staking effectively is a Ponzi scheme. Generally, give away your tokens. Eventually, you'll run out of all of those tokens, and okay, I've got my token up to a certain price, but then watch it plummet. There's no long-term thinking. And so we've got like I mentioned, like avatars, and I mentioned the metaverse spaces. So just imagine a really cool game where you've got a whole avatar company now to create your avatars. And then you can go into like a third-party shooter playing really cool games and tournaments using those avatars, which also live in Virtua. And those tournaments earn you tokens, which you can then use almost like a secondary synthetic token alongside your first one. So when I talk about games, I mean really, really cool FPS, but third-party shooters. We are also integrating some other big games into this ecosystem that are purely tied into the Vaynar staking, but still exist within Virtua and within some of our partners who are coming into Virtua as well. Ecosystems.
I love that. And can you name, are there any name drops of partners you guys are
I
bringing
can't,
on? I know you
otherwise my
have fun.
marketing team would kill me. They've literally got a 90-day plan with the drops for every single day. But yeah, but also, we're working with, like, for example, one of the largest credit card companies in the world all around gaming. That's going to be an announcement soon. They're up
Love
for it.
that. I love that. Yeah, gotta try for the viewers. Grab for a couple extra clicks in there, gotta try a little bit. And do you guys have like what's on your live event schedule for 2024? Anything like Token 2049? We'll be in Dubai and
Yeah,
stuff like that.
I think we'll be there. We've got the Satoshi Roundtable coming up. I'm going to try to be there as well. We're going to be with we're doing like a Binance event in the Seychelles this weekend with a load of the key guys, influencers from around the Middle East and Africa. We've got like a heavy schedule. I mean, we're going to be in Africa. We're going to be in Pakistan. We're going to be in the UAE, Singapore. We're working with Google as well, so I think we're going to be at the big Singapore events. We're working on some really cool stuff with them, with some of their beta technology, stuff that won't be out. We are getting our hands on first, and we're going to be creating products on it to effectively be the beta tech for them. Because look, right now people are creating metaverses and they're drawing everything by hand and they're using engines. Imagine if you got a generative world created in high fidelity with weather patterns based on maps. That's the sort of stuff Google have got. It's crazy tech, amazing stuff. So, I was in Singapore for a week and I spent time in the Google offices just hashing out what bits and pieces we plug into the chain. And their AI, the backend stack, there's tons of stuff we're going to use and leverage and co-partner with them. And there's some dApps that are coming out on our chain as well, Google and Vaynar partnerships.
I love that. And you guys have been around for quite some time and the team has grown. How big is the Vayner and Virtua team at this point?
In total, about 130 people.
Definitely you guys are putting it together. Because you see, like you said earlier, you see a lot of teams that say they want to build a game and they don't understand how much money or how big the team's got to be. You know, they're like 4 and 5 member teams trying to drop an NFT and build a game. And you know, it really takes an army like you guys
The guy, you know what? This is not an army. This is a battalion. If you look at something like
have.
Star, if you look at something like Star Citizen, okay, that was by Chris Roberts. Chris Roberts made Wing Commander. It's one of the most popular games that ever was out on the PC, and it was a brilliant game. He has raised over 500 million. I think it's up to $600 million, and been at it for 10 years. And this is someone who built a space game. And then you've got in the last crypto cycle, 15 guys in a shed. Who've raised about $5 million and saying, guess what? We're going to do it. I'm sorry. I don't believe you. I don't care what you say to me. I'm not going to believe anything I see on your deck. You can create an unreal generative demo all day long. You are not going to be able to build this game. I'm sorry. There's nothing you can do to persuade me. You know, look at No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky, that was an indie team that built it forever, and they've been iterating for 8 years to get it right. Don't believe the hype.
And so how did you go about like setting out to build the team? Like, were there specific folks you wanted, or was it specific like I guess job roles that you were looking for? How did you go to build it? Because you have built an amazing team so far.
Well, the thing is, when I initially set up, I hunted down Gary Bracey. So Gary Bracey used to work with Ocean Software. He was the first guy who licensed video games from movies. So RoboCop, Star Trek, all of those things were licensed by him. So he had great inroads. And it took me ages to pin him down, right? He was sort of like, I'm sort of retired. I want to do this sort of stuff. I said, meet me for a Starbucks. So I was going back to Dubai, managed to pin him down. We're in a car park in Staines, right? And I've sat him down, we started talking, and we clicked so much talking about the vision that within a week we'd set up the company. And then after that, we started pulling in people. So like Doug Dyer, who works on us, he's the guy who was behind the Rise of Empires on Microsoft, you know? So we got Doug Dyer, we had Keith, a VP of Electronic Arts. And then after that, we start putting in the crypto people and the tech people who are from my side. So my dev team, a lot of those guys have worked for me for like 12 years, 14 years, 15 years. Every time I've created a new company, they've all moved. And we're good friends and they know me forwards and backwards. And oh, blah. They can figure out what that means and actually engineer a product from it. So I bought in the tech, the crypto. And there's some really lovely people we met along the way, like David Atkinson of Holochain. He was one of the key guys we had at the beginning. And you know, there's a lot of friends we've made along the way. And just recently, like we've got some really amazing people from Dubai who only have been focusing on building ecosystems and have dealt with every chain possible. So as we've expanded Vayner, we've added people into the mix who are now we're in the point where we can say who's the top guy in building crypto wallets, who's the top guy in building ecosystems, who's the top guy in this, and now we're getting the best of the best coming to us because we're speaking the same language, we've got the same bruises, we've had the same dramas over the last few years. You know, we've seen our investment go to zero, our investment go up. We've seen us trying to build stuff. We've had to pivot 20 times. We've had to change our underpants the same amount of times over those years. So now we're at the point where getting even people in now is very, very easy. But that foundation had to be strong. And that means great tech team, great people who understand games and who understand innovation. And so we had a lot of those guys in from day one.
Yeah, it sounds like you've had built a real foundation over the years of everybody you've known before blockchain, and you know, focus is bringing the experts in to build on the cutting edge.
And work with who you like, right?
Yeah.
That's like so important. You know, work with who you like to work with. Work with people you see them every day and you're happy to see their face. I walk into the office. So we have an office in Dubai. I walk into the office and the first hour is just chewing the fat. This is wonderful. Just catching up with people you really love and then you get to work with them. So that's a fun part of having your own business. The not fun part is like everything else, you know?
Never
Sometimes
turning
they
off.
yeah. And honestly, the volatility of the crypto market is enough to give anyone gray hair, you know?
Yeah, We have definitely felt that. Doing the event, we started it in like 2021, didn't have the first event for a year and a half, and the only two we did have been in a bear market, and it's been extremely painful to survive, but we have. We're here and excited to kind of make it into this next up round, you know.
But you know what? That's a testament to just endurance, right? Literally, this is not for the faint-hearted, and you have to persevere. In the entire bear market, we were pushing our funds into developing our blockchain, into developing the metaverse, gamification, crafting, building out all of those ecosystem pieces. Because we knew we're building a long-term company and we're going to have to take the rough with the smooth. So while everyone else was knuckling down and saying you should go down to 15 people, we were hiring more people and doubling down. There's a UK comedy called Only Fools and Horses, and the main character goes, "Who dares, Rodis? Next year we'll be a billionaire." That's sort of us.
I love that. That's great. And so, like, speaking towards the future of gaming, do you really feel like you see, Facebook and all these people coming out with like AR headsets and stuff like that? Where do you feel the future of gaming goes? Is it AR? Is it VR? A mixture? What's your thought?
I think that Apple Vision Pro is a good indication of the direction it's going to go. Okay. I think 3 years to 4 years down the line, technology will start making computers redundant. Your laptop will basically be your glasses, but you've got to see a lot more miniaturization. And I think you'll have that at one end. And at the other end, it'll be super powerful mobile gaming. But the key thing about all of this is mobility. People don't want to be tethered, even having a laptop in your lap, going to a gaming rig. People want that absolute movement of between places. You want a rich, immersive AR light experience. It's going to be something like that. I'm not sure if Facebook will ever make a product which works. I really had a lot of hope in that, but I'm not sure they can anymore. But the Apple Vision out the gate has been phenomenal, but it's too expensive and too clunky. It's going to need a few generation cycles. But imagine if you've got a massive headset display and it's lighter and it's faster, and with all the custom chips, you'll have a whole room worth of computing in your hands. And people don't mind tapping on something non-haptic because now look at the phones. BlackBerry was everywhere. Now every phone is touch glass. So I think people can do it with keyboards and it will be just that or this. I think that even the laptop and the personal computer will evaporate. It'll all be pure mobile devices that offer you completely different categories of immersion, portability in your hand or full immersion.
I completely agree with that. And I kind of look at like the Apple product they have coming out. I guess I'm gonna date myself, but I was born in the 80s and I remember when my family like got their first big screen TV and like it cost $5,000. And now I have one above my fireplace and it's like 200 bucks for a Google Smart TV of the same size, you know? So I see the vision of what Apple's building with the Apple Vision Pro, and it'll come down in price and be more accessible in the
And even
future.
AR headsets, like AR glasses, like the NREAL, right? I use them all the time. I don't, when I'm flying, I'm not, well, and it's really interesting, like if you're looking at a screen, you're sitting down and your head is fixed in a certain position the whole time. If you're in an airplane, you're on a TV, you're doing that. But when you wear the glasses, all of a sudden you're naturally relaxing. And you can look in any direction and you can enjoy that massive screen bigger than your TV. So when I fly, I just wear those glasses. I don't bother looking at that screen. You can literally chill out, your back like this, and you're watching the screen. So it changes the behaviors. And it actually means that you realize certain things, like the fact you it's in that spot. You're sitting there hunched, looking at that spot all the time. But when you have things like AR glasses, even that now, the NREAL glasses are brilliant. And you're having a super big screen and you're completely relaxed. You're like this slouching, lying in bed, watching something and listening to it and annoying your wife, but you can do all of that,
Chua, that is a really good point. I never thought about that. Like on those long flights, you're staring at a screen that's,
Like this.
6 inches. And
Recline, look up and watch a movie. I'm telling you, if you buy one of those, it'll be the best investment you ever made. I take I stand by them.
you changed my life, and my wife is gonna send you an angry message after she sees the Vision Pro on the debit card later this afternoon. That's pretty cool though. I do agree with you on like where the future is for gaming and stuff like that. And it definitely, you guys have it in the roadmap and you see the vision of what Virtua and Vayner is building towards that, which is really cool.
And we already do full VR. We're already working on Apple Vision. You know, like we've got the Virtua Gamers Lounge, which is like a gamers lounge. Works. It has to touch every digital touch point. Works in mobile, web, desktop, and VR, and an augmented reality. And there'll be like an AR version on the Apple Vision Pro. So it brings that environment to every single touch point. So it's not a case of it's only on this. If it's going to fly, especially with a new technology, it has to be on everything. You can engage with that metaverse space on mobile, web, convenience, fast, mobile, richer experience in your pocket, headset, full immersive experience. But you need to reach that anywhere. I think that's the key for metaverse at the moment. Like
100%.
having 10,000 users, I mean, honestly, it's like this is why we went this way with the Vayner chain. Because by having, let's say, our first gaming company, 500 million users, let's say you acquire 5% of them into metaverse, we have more users than any metaverse company in the world. Having 10,000 monthly users in the top metaverse is nothing when Roblox is 60 million a day. It's farcical. So you've got to acquire those sort of numbers to actually succeed. Those should be your metrics, not our crypto metrics. The crypto metrics are useless.
I, Jawad, you're speaking my language. I completely agree with you. We're too small to measure against, and why are we measuring against the cutting edge of where nobody's at? We need
Yeah,
to compete with the
exactly.
people where the people are, you know?
Bring the people in and make it convenient. Make it so every brand will use your blockchain. And then when brands want to have metaverse experiences in games, they come to Virtua. They come to our avatars. Every time they do an activation, we acquire more users. Every time a games company comes in, we acquire more users. And we provide a cycle of value across the board. And that's the only way you grow. And you know what? This isn't new. This is how companies have been doing it for the last 30 years. So we just have to do what's been done before.
I love it. Man, this has been an extremely educational podcast for me. I thought I knew a lot about Virtua and Vayner. Especially with the Vayner release, and I've actually learned a lot about yourself, about the company, and how you guys got started. Where do people listening, if this is the first time they've gotten introduced to Virtua or Vayner, like where do they go to find out more? Is it, Virtua.com? Where do you drive traffic?
There's two places you go to. Vaynarchain.com should be where they go, and also virtua.com. And we're very active in Discord, so we're all over the place. And our Twitter is alive all the time, so it's always very busy. So I'm sure we can give you a list of links and stuff, and we'll provide those all to you. But like what I love is like all our guys are doing different things. Our marketing people, the people in our community, they do that stuff to death, and they constantly hammer me for not posting any hashtag because I always forget them.
I'm the worst at it too. I call myself the boomer of Rare Network.
Seriously,
Because I
I'm a
forget to
millennial.
do
What's dangerous?
everything. But yeah, I'm horrible at like doing the hashtags and following up with that stuff as well. So I let the team yell at me and handle most of that stuff, and they do a
Exactly.
great
That's the
job.
safest way to do it.
Yeah.
See you.
I appreciate the time, Jawad. Anything we want to wrap up with, like anything I missed that you want to put out there?
No,
No?
I think it's been a really robust conversation. We've covered a lot of ground.
I
I think,
love it.
yeah, we've covered a lot. I mean, I don't think I've ever picked up that ZX Spectrum off the shelf for the last 10 years. So there.
That's awesome. I'm glad we got that to happen. And as these announcements come out over the next couple months, we'd love to have you back on the podcast
Honestly,
and help get that out there.
we got some incredible stuff coming out the woodwork. Go big or go home. And also, so much of what we're doing, we're really focused. Honestly, a key thing for us is empowering developers who don't have an opportunity. And there's so many developers around the world that have just become commodities. Literally, they do all the work. They have a label stamped on them, and they don't get any recognition. And these guys, they need a leg up. And this is what I was doing out in Pakistan, and this is what I'm doing out in Africa. Crypto is meant to be decentralized, and it's meant to be for everyone. So let's include everyone. So you're going to see some killer announcements across the world coming up.
I'm super excited for that, and I really appreciate the time today, Jawad. I know you
My
guys are
pleasure.
extremely busy over there, so thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.